I shake my head. We need the damned legions from the south. We need something to stop these monsters. Work with what you have, not what you want. The Commandant's own words. What else, Dex? The Karkans were spotted spreading a white substance around the edges of their army, Shrike. Almost like a border. We've no idea what it is.
It is salt.
The shudder-inducing voice of the Nightbringer behind me doesn't even make me jump. I am too exhausted. Salt, I say. Why the bleeding hells would they be spreading salt around their camp?
Ghosts do not like salt, Shrike, he says, as if this is the most natural thing in the world. It will not stop the Karkans who are possessed, for their human hosts make them immune to such tricks. But it will stop attacks from the wild ghosts who approach, ghosts who are not enslaved to the warlocks.
I gape at him. More ghosts?
They have broken free of the waiting place and are drawn to the blood and violence of the battle here. Their arrival is imminent.
The Nightbringer reaches a hand to my shoulder and sings a few high notes. Immediately, my body, which burned from a dozen wounds, relaxes, the pain fading. I accept his aid gratefully. He has done this every day since the Karkans launched their assault, sometimes twice a day, so I can keep fighting. He does not ask questions. He simply arrives, heals me, and disappears again. As he turns to leave, I stop him. The day I healed Livia, you said that one day my trust in you would be my only weapon. I shake my head at the disaster before me, the flagging men. The unending army of the Karkans. Antium, the capital, the pearl of the Empire, slowly crumbling.
Today is not that day, Bloodshrike.
His eyes linger on my face. No, I realize, on my ring, as my hand is propped against my face. Then he is gone. Dex, I say, find as much salt as you can. Salt the wall. The infirmaries, wherever our fighting men are. Tell the men not to touch it. What does it mean that the ghosts have broken free of the waiting place? Have they killed Elias? When the moon rises, the Karkans call a retreat. Nothing has changed. Our men are still barely keeping them at bay. Their unnaturally powerful soldiers still wreak havoc. They have the advantage. Why the bleeding hells are they withdrawing? A ragged cheer goes up along the wall from my men. I do not join them. Whatever is making the Karkans withdraw cannot be good for us. Moments later, the wind carries a strange sound to me. Wailing. The hair on the back of my neck rises as it draws closer. The cries are too high-pitched to be of this world. The wild ghosts. The men grasp their weapons, stalwart in the face of this new terror. The wailing intensifies. Shrike! Dex appears beside me. What in 10 hells is that sound? The salt, Dex, I say. Did you spread it? Only along the wall, he says. We ran out before we could spread it in the city. It won't be enough. A pale, smoky cloud passes near the Karkans, veering away from the salt border they have marked around their army, like a trail of ants avoiding a line of water. The shrieks from the cloud block out every other sound, including the drums, the shouts of the men, the ragged rhythm of my own breath. There are faces in that cloud. Thousands of them. Ghosts. My men exclaim in fear. And I do not know what to do. I do not know how to kill this enemy, how to fight it. I do not know what it will do to us. Help, I scream in my mind. Father, mother, Elias, someone, help us. I might as well be calling out to the moon. The cloud is at the wall now, streaming over. Cold blasts through me as the ghosts shriek past,
hissing at the salt along the wall before plummeting down to the unprotected men holding the gates and into the streets beyond. The soldiers do not know what hit them. One moment they gaze at the cloud in wary fear. The next they twitch and shake, possessed. Then, to my horror, they begin attacking each other like rabid animals. The Karkans roar and storm the city gates. We rain down arrows, pitch, rocks, but it is not enough. I grab Dex by his collar. We need more salt! It's gone! We used everything we could find! If our own men are attacking each other, we cannot hold the gates, I tell him. We will lose the city. Get to Harper. Tell him to collapse the entrances to the tunnels. We cannot risk the Karkans getting to our people. But what about the people who are still left? Go! Shrike! Another voice calls to me, and Farris bulls through the soldiers fighting to keep back the Karkans. Down below, the men tear each other apart, attacking with anything they can find. One of the soldiers on the wall flings handfuls of salt down, perhaps hoping to scare the ghosts out of the bodies they have possessed. But it does nothing. Any other army would have fled the wall at this sight, Karkans crawling over the walls, our own men possessed. But the legions hold. Shrike! Farris is out of breath, but he still has the sense to speak quietly. The midwife we found to replace the last one is dead. I just found her swinging from a beam in her own house. Well, bloody find another. There are no others. I don't have time for this. You don't understand. Farris crouches down and hisses, and I can see panic that he'd never feel in battle in his shaking hands. I sought out the midwife because it's time. Your sister is in labor, Shrike. The baby is coming.
Chapter 49 Liar. Cook does not speak to me for a long time after I wake. Her face tells me what happened to the children I was trying to help. Still, I ask. The blast killed them, she says. He was quick. Her golden skin is pale, but her hunched shoulders and shaking hands tell me of her rage. Nearly killed you. Two. I sit up. Where are we? The old scholars' district, she says. In the slaves' quarters. It's farther from the chaos than the Mariner Embassy, though not by much. She dabs a wound on my face with a warm cloth, careful not to let her skin touch mine. The skies must love you, girl. That blast threw you 30 feet into a pile of feed. My head aches. And I struggle to remember. The skies must love you. No, not the skies. I knew that voice. I knew well the feel of that arm, strange and warped and too hot. Why would the Nightbringer throw me out of the way of the blast? Why, when he knows what I am trying to do? I had no plan in my head in the moment of the blast, nothing but trying to get the children out. Am I playing into his hands somehow? Or was it something else? Your heroics cost us. Cook stirs a pot of some sort of acrid tea over a cook fire. Do you know what day it is? I open my mouth to respond, but Cook cuts me off. It's a day of the grain moon, she says. We lost our chance to get to the Bloodshrike. By tomorrow, the city will be breached. The marshals are stretched too thin. And there's no relief in sight. She takes a sniff of the tea and adds something else to it. Girl, she says, you trained with your, she takes a deep breath, grandfather, she spits out, in healing? For a year and a half or so, she nods thoughtfully. As did I, she said, before I ran away like a damned fool. When did he take you to meet Nell? The apothecary. I am bewildered that she knows about Nell, until I remember yet again that of course she would know Nell. Pop trained my mother from when she turned 12 until she was 16, when she left home to join the resistance. It was at the beginning of my training, I say. Maybe 3 months in. Nell showed me how to make dozens of poultices and teas from basic ingredients. Most of the remedies were things that only a woman needs, for moon cycles, and to prevent the getting of child. She nods. That's what I thought. She pours the foul tea into a waiting gourd and corks it. I think she is going to give it to me, but instead, she stands. Change the dressing on your wounds, she says. You'll find everything you need there. Stay inside. I'll be back. While she's gone, I change the dressings, but I can't stop thinking about the blast, the Nightbringer throwing me out of the way, the brother and sister who died. Skies, they were so young. That little girl couldn't have been older than 10, and her little brother, Najam, no more than 7. I promised my parents I'd keep him safe. I'm sorry, I whisper. I could have saved them if I had moved faster, if I had not taken the route I did. How many other scholar children had been ordered to stay in the city? How many others have no way out? How many are expected to die along with their martial overlords if the Corkins take Antium? Moose's voice rings in my head. We need you as a voice for the scholars. We need you as our Sim and Shield. Though Cook told me not to, I leave the crumbling little shack in which we've taken shelter and walk outside, wincing from the way the movement pulls at the gash on my face. The house I am in faces a large square. There are heaps of rubble on either side and more dilapidated cottages beyond them. Across the square, dozens of scholars remove the bricks of a still-smoking shack, trying to get to those trapped inside. Boots thud beyond the square, their rhythmic tattoo growing louder. Quick as lightning, word spreads. The scholars disappear into their houses as the patrol marches into the square. The house I am in is set back, but still, I make my way up the stairs, dagger in hand. I crouch beside a window to watch the patrol's progress, waiting for the screams of the scholars. I hear only a few, from those the marshals have found and dragged out, whipping them into a line to no doubt save martial lives from the Karkin's destruction. When the marshals are gone, the remaining scholars emerge again, back at the rubble of the ruined house. I am wondering how they communicated so quickly when the stairwell creaks. Girl, Cook rasps, are you here? When I get down the stairs, she jerks her head to the north. Come with me, she says, and don't ask questions. She no longer holds the gourd of tea, and I want to know what she has done with it. But I hold my tongue. As we head through the square, Cook does not spare a glance for the scholars. Cook, I run to catch up with her. It's as if she knows what I am planning to ask. These people, we could help them, get them out of here. We could, she sounds utterly unsurprised at my suggestion. And then you could watch as the Nightbringer takes the ring from the Shrike, sets his accursed subjects free, and destroys our world. I am the one who has to get the ring, I say, not you. You could rally the scholars, show them the way out of here. You said yourself that the Karkins will overrun the city. What do you think will happen to these people when they do? As I speak, we slink past a group of scholars putting out a fire alongside martial oxes. They are children, teenagers dragging buckets of water when they should be getting the hells out of here. That's not our problem, Cook hisses, and grabs me, pulling me away before the ox soldiers see us and press us into service. I have other things to do while you get the ring. What other things? Retribution, Cook says. That bitch of a commandant is here, and by the skies I'll... You trade vengeance on Keris Veturia for thousands of lives. Getting rid of her would save thousands more. I have waited years for this. And now finally, I don't bleeding care, I say to her. Whatever your vengeance is, whether it works or not, it is not as important as the scholar children who will die if there is no one to help them. Please. We're not God's girl. We can't save everyone. The scholars have survived this long. They'll survive a bit longer. The mission is all that matters. Come now. There's little time. She nods to a building ahead. That's the Blackguard barracks. The Shrike will be arriving within the hour. When that happens, you'll know what to do. What? That's it? How am I supposed to get in? How do I... You need a plan that the Nightbringer can't pick out of your head, she rasps. I've just given you one. There's a stack of clean uniforms in a basket outside the gates. Take it in and up to the laundry closet on the second floor. Watch the hallway from that closet. When the time comes, you'll know what to do. And if the Shrike threatens you, tell her I sent you. Go. You? Why would I? Do you know her? Move, girl! I take two steps, then turn back. Cook! I look in the direction of the scholar neighborhood. Please, just tell them. I'll be waiting here for your return. Cook grabs my daggers from me, including the one Elias gave me, ignoring my protests as she glances about furtively. Hurry up, or you'll get us both killed. Uneasy without my blades, I go around the front of the barracks. What does Cook have planned for me? How will I know what to do? I spot the basket of clean laundry and balance it against my hip. Taking a deep breath, I pass through the front gates and across the cobblestone courtyard. The ground rumbles, and across the street, a projectile slams into a building, leveling it in seconds. The two legionnaires who guard the barracks entrance take cover, as do I. When it's clear no more missiles are coming this way, I make for the door, hoping the legionnaires will be too distracted to notice me. No such luck.
You there, one of them holds out a hand. We need to search the basket.
Oh, skies.
No idea why we even need uniforms, the other legionnaire says. We're all dead anyway. Shut it, Edius. The legionnaire finishes searching the basket and waves me on. Go on, girl.
The central room of the barracks is lined with cots, perhaps for men to sleep on while taking shifts at the wall. But they all stand empty. No one in the entire damn city is sleeping through this. Though it's clear the barracks are almost entirely abandoned, I skirt the cots carefully and skulk up the stairs, unnerved by the silence of the place. At the top of the stairs, a long hallway stretches into darkness. The doors are shut, but from behind one, clothing rustles and someone gasps in pain. I keep walking and get to a laundry closet. The cries continue. Someone must be injured. After half an hour, the cries transform into screams. It is definitely a woman, and for a moment I wonder, is it the Shrike? Has Cook injured her? Am I supposed to go into the room and take the ring while she lies dying? I creep out of the laundry closet and inch down the hall toward the cries. A male speaks, and it sounds like he's trying to soothe the woman. Another scream. This time, I cock my head. It doesn't sound like someone who is injured. In fact, it sounds like... Where is she? The woman wails, and a door in the hallway slams open. I bolt back into the laundry closet just after catching a glimpse of a woman pacing the room. At first, I think she is the Blood Shrike, but she has no mask, and she is very pregnant. In that moment, I understand the sounds that came from the room. I understand why Cook asked me if I'd met Nell. Nell taught me remedies for moon cycle pain and ways to prevent pregnancy. But she also showed me tricks for relieving pain during childbirth and afterward. I had to learn them because delivering babies was one of the very first things Pop taught me, one of the main things he did as a healer. And I understand, finally, how I am going to get the ring from the Blood Shrike.
Chapter 50. Elias. As I come up over the wall, as I force myself to ignore the havoc wreaked by the possessed Karkans, I hear the lupine snarls of a group of martial soldiers tearing at each other, completely possessed. I've always loathed the city of Antium, Everything about it screams empire. From the high, forbidding walls to the streets architected in levels to repel attack. For the first time, I'm glad that the city is so quintessentially martial, because the forces arrayed against it and within it are great, and the defenses are terrifyingly flimsy. I windwalk down the wall, racing toward the stairs that will take me to the ravening masses of possessed martial soldiers below. There are hundreds of ghosts to be found, magicked and set free. The stairs disappear two by two under my feet, and I am nearly at the bottom when I recognize a head of blonde hair ahead of me, battling through the possessed soldiers. Her face is dark with ash, streaked with tears, as she swings a great warhammer, trying to knock her countrymen aside. From the west, a great groan sounds, the splintering of wood and warping of metal. The Karkans are nearly through the gates of the city.
Stop!
My voice, amplified by my Arthur's magic, explodes across the area beneath the wall. The possessed turn to me as one, my magic drawing them in like a cobra's gaze draws a mouse.
Elias?
The Bloodshrike whispers, but I do not look at her.
Come to me!
I order the spirits forward.
Release those you have possessed!
These ghosts are more feral, and they resist, curling away from me. My anger rises, and I find my hands are on my sims. But my Arthur's magic takes hold, and an unnatural calm settles over me. No, part of me scrambles against the intrusion of the magic, which is more aggressive than before. My Arthur is controlling my body, my mind. This isn't right. But isn't it? I must join with the magic to become the soul catcher. First, I needed to release my attachments to the human world. And now I must let go of myself, my identity, my body.
No! Something deep within screams. No, no, no!
But how else will I move so many ghosts on? Their presence here is my fault. The suffering they brought about is my fault. I can never undo it. All the deaths they have caused will be on my conscience until the day I pass from this earth. But I can stop it. And to do that, I must surrender. Take over, I tell the magic. Become me.
Release the humans you've possessed!
The ghosts shy back at my order, so bewildered at their own deaths that they seek only to hold, hurt, love, feel once more.
There is nothing for you here, only pain.
I draw them all close with the magic. Martha sinks into my very soul with every second that passes, becoming irrevocably bonded to me. The Bloodshrike and Faris gape, and they do not see their friend Elias Veturius. They do not see the man who escaped Blackcliff, who broke his vows, who defied the Commandant and the Emperor to break into Koth prison. They do not see the boy they survived Blackcliff with. They see the soul catcher. The ghosts sigh and release the bodies they have possessed, passing on from this world. First dozens, then, as I let the magic take over, hundreds. The chaos fades as this small group of soldiers, at least, returns to themselves.
You came!
The Bloodshrike weeps openly now.
You heard me, and you came! Elias, the Karkans on the wall, they're killing us! They're about to break through!
I did not come for you. It is my voice she hears, the merciless monotone of a mask. And yet it is not me. It is my Arthur.
Stop!
I scream at him in my mind.
She is my friend!
But my Arthur does not listen. I came, I hear myself saying, because it is my sworn duty to protect the world of the living from the realm of ghosts. Leave me to my work, Bloodshrike, and I will leave you to yours. I windwalk away from her, moving swiftly to the next group of possessed soldiers. Why did I do that? Why was I so cruel? Because it is necessary. I know the answer almost before I ask the question. Because I must pass the ghosts. Because my duty must come first. Because love cannot live here. I skim over the wall of the city, looking for the next group of wayward ghosts, nothing but a flash of darkness to the human eye. Just outside Antium's eastern gate, the Karkans gather and march forward with a battering ram the size of a mariner trade vessel. They punch through the ancient gates of Antium like a fist through a paper screen. No one mans the wall. No pitch comes pouring down. No archers fight back. The marshals have withdrawn. A familiar pale-skinned figure makes her way from the battle, a group of men at her back. Caris Veturia. She appears calm as she allows the gate to fall. A great groan echoes through the air, louder than the screams of the dying and the cries of those who still fight. Wood splinters, metal screeches, and a hair-raising howl of victory rises from the ranks of the Karkans. The eastern gate sags open, and the Karkans pour in. The city of Antium, founded by Tyus I, seat of the Imperator Invictus and Pearl of the Empire, is breached. The lives of its people are forfeit. I turn away, for it is no concern of mine.
Chapter 51, The Bloodshrike. I can hear Livy screaming from the barracks doors, and I fly up the stairs. She might be dying. The baby might be dying. Skies, what do we do? When I shove the door open, I find my sister doubled over, Raelius's large hand clenched in hers. Every muscle in my friend's huge body tenses, his dark face turning grim. Empress, I say. Livia, I'm here.
He's coming, Helly. Livia pants. Raelius tested my tea this morning, but it tasted funny. I don't know what to do. I don't feel right.
Oh, Hells, I know exactly nothing about childbirth. Maybe you should sit down. A knock on the door. All of us, Raelius, Varus, Livia and I, go silent. No one but Marcus is supposed to know she's here. But I arrived in such a rush with Varus that though we took pains not to be followed, we might very well have been. My sister stuffs her fist to her mouth and groans, clutching her belly. Her dress is wet from where her waters have broken, and her sweat-soaked face is sickly grey. Raelius extricates his fingers from Livy's and approaches the door, Sims drawn. I shove Livy behind me while Farris swipes a crossbow from the wall and points it at the door.
Who goes there?
A female voice answers. I need to speak to the Bloodshrike. I can help. I do not recognize the voice, though something about it is strangely familiar. I gesture for Raelius to open the door. In less than a second, he has his Sims at the throat of the hooded figure in the doorway. She doesn't need to lower her hood for me to recognize her. I spot her golden eyes peering out at me from the shadows.
You,
I snarl, but she raises her hands and the sheaths at her waist are empty. I can deliver the baby, she says quickly. Cook sent me.
Why the hells would that old bat send you, I say.
Livia screams again, unable to stifle the sound, and Lyra looks over my shoulder. She's close, she says. She'll have another contraction in only a few moments. The child is coming. I do not know how in the burning skies she got here. Perhaps it is an assassination attempt. But why would Lyra of Serra risk such a thing when she knows that hurting my sister would result in her immediate death? I have no wish to harm her, she says. Fate led me here, Bloodshrike. Let me help you. If my sister or the babe die, I say to her as I stand aside. So do you. A grim nod is the only response. She knows. Immediately she turns to Farris, who squints as he looks at her. Hang on a minute, he says. Aren't you? Yes, she says. Hot water, please, Lieutenant Farris. 2 pots of it. And clean sheets from the laundry, 12 of them. Towels, too. She goes to my sister, taking her by the arm. Let's get you out of these clothes, she says. And there's a gentleness to her voice, a sweetness that immediately calms Livia. My sister sighs, and moments later Lyra unlaces her dress, ordering Raelius to turn away. I shift from foot to foot. I don't know if this is a pro. She's giving birth, Bloodshrike, Lyra says. It is hot, difficult work, and she shouldn't be trussed up for it. Bad for the baby. Right, I say, knowing I sound like an idiot. Well, if it's bad for the baby... Lyra glances at me, and I can't tell if she's irritated by me or laughing at me. Once Lieutenant Farris returns with the water, she says, pour it into the basin, please. Wash your hands well, with soap. Remove your rings. You can leave them there. She nods to the basin and helps a now scantily dressed Livia settle herself at the edge of my simple wooden desk chair. Farris comes in, takes one look at Livy, and turns bright red before I take the water from him, and he asks, in a choked voice, where Lyra wants the sheets. Stand watch, Lieutenant Farris, Lyra says as she takes the sheets. There were only 2 guards outside, and they barely searched me. If I got in here with relative ease, so can your enemies. The drums thunder, and I hear the panic in the order given out. All units to the 2nd level gate immediately. Breach imminent. Pleading hells, has the 1st level been breached? I should go, I say. The city. I cannot do this alone, Shrike, Lyra says quickly. Though I'm sure your man here, she nods to a wild-eyed Lieutenant Raelius, would help if ordered. The Empress is your sister, and your presence will bring her comfort. The city, the Karkans, but Livy screams again, and Lyra curses. Shrike, have you washed your hands yet? I do it quickly, and Lyra grabs me and yanks me over to Livia. Push your fists into your sister's hips, like so. She points to just below the small of my sister's back. Every time she screams, I want you to push there, she says. It will give her relief. In between, rub her shoulders, pull her hair out of the way, and help keep her cool. Oh, skies, Livia says. I'm going to be sick. My stomach sinks. What's wrong? Feeling sick is good. Lyra's tone is soothing, but she gives me a look that very plainly asks that I keep my mouth shut. It cleanses the body. The scholar girl gives my sister a bucket and continues to speak to her in low, calm tones as she scrubs her own hands and arms over and over until her gold-brown skin is red. Then she comes back and feels between my sister's legs. I look away, uncomfortable. Livia shudders again. It's only been minutes since the last time she cried out. I dig my fists into her hips. Immediately she relaxes. How many times have you done this? Livy asks Lyra. Enough to know that you're going to be just fine, Lyra says. Now breathe with me. For the next 2 hours, with the scholar girl's calm voice guiding her, Livia labours. Sometimes she walks, sometimes she sits. When I suggest Livy lie in the bed at one point, both women turn on me with a unified no, and I cease. Outside, the drums grow more frantic. I need to get out there. I need to help defend this city. And yet I cannot leave Livia. I must see this child born, for he is our future. If the city falls, I must see him to safety. I am torn, and I pace back and forth, not knowing what the bleeding skies I'm supposed to do. Why is childbirth so damn messy? And why didn't I learn anything about it? Lyra, I finally say to the scholar, when Livia is resting between one of her contractions. The city, it's about to be breached. I can hear it from the drums. I cannot be here. Raelius can... Lyra yanks me aside, mouth thin. It's taking too long, she says. You said everything was fine. I'm not about to tell a pregnant woman she's not fine, she hisses. I've seen it happen before. Both times the child died, and the mother did too. They are in danger. I might need you. She gives me a significant look. I might need your healing. Breach! Main gate! All units to second level gate! The drums thunder frantically now, as message after message is passed through, so that troops might know where to go, where to fight. Livia screams, and this time there is a different quality about it. I turn back to my sister, hoping to the skies that the drums have it wrong. Lyra drapes sheets over the chairs, on the floors. She orders me to bring more buckets of water, and when she asks me to lay a towel on the bed, my sister shakes her head. There's a blanket, she says. It's in the bureau. I brought it with me. I grab it, a simple pale blue and white square that is soft as clouds. I realize suddenly that this child will be my kin, a new Aquila, my nephew. The moment deserves more than the thunder of Karkin missiles and my sister's screams. Mother should be here. Hannah. Instead, it is only me. How the hells did it all go so wrong? All right, Livia, Lyra says. It's time now. You've been very brave, very strong. Be brave a bit longer, and you'll be holding your baby. And I promise that you won't much care about the pain. How do you know? Trust me. Lyra's smile is so convincing that even I believe it. Shrike, hold her hands. She lowers her voice and sing. My sister grabs onto me with the strength of a mask in an arm wrestling competition. With Raelius and Varys watching, I find Livia's song in my mind and sing it, pouring my will into giving her strength, keeping her whole. At Lyra's urging, my sister pushes with all of her might. Childbirth is not something I have wasted much thought on. I do not wish for children. I will never be a midwife. I have a sister but no female friends. Babies hold no appeal for me, though I was always fascinated by the way my mother loved us, with a fierceness that was almost frightening. She used to call us her miracles. Now, as my sister releases a roar, I finally understand. Lyra is holding a slippery, wet, dirty thing in her hands. She snatches the towels from me, pulling the child into one while using her other hand to unwrap the cord from his neck. She moves quickly, almost frantically, and a strange, unfamiliar terror fills me. Why isn't he making any sounds? I demand. Why is he... Lyra puts her finger in the babe's mouth, clearing it, and a moment later... He releases an ear-shattering wail. Oh, I squeak, as Lyra shoves the baby at me. I... Whisper your hopes for him in his ear, she says. When I stare at her, she sighs impatiently. It's considered good luck. She turns back to my sister, doing skies know what, and I stare down at the child. His wails have faded, and he watches me. Appearing mildly bewildered. I cannot say I blame him. His skin is golden brown, a few shades darker than Livia's when she has spent a summer in the sun. His hair is fine and black. He has his father's yellow eyes, and yet they are not Marcus's. They are beautiful, innocent. He opens his mouth and vocalizes, and it sounds to me like, ha! As if he's trying to say the beginning of my name. It is a ridiculous thought, but a burst of pride floods me. He knows me. Hail, nephew. I pull him close to me so that he's only inches from my face. I wish for you joy and a family that loves you adventures that shape you, and true friends to have them with. His fist flails, leaving a trail of blood across my mask. I recognize something in him then, something of me, though it is not in his face. It is deeper. I think of the song I sang him. I wonder how I changed him. Shouts outside pull my attention away from the child. The angry tenor of a familiar voice rises downstairs. Footsteps thunder up the steps, and the door bursts open. Marcus, along with a half dozen men of Gens Aquila, enters, sim drawn. The Emperor is covered in blood, his own or that of the Karkans I do not know. He does not look at me or Livia or Lyra. He reaches me in two steps. Without sheathing his sword, he holds out his left arm for his child. I hand the baby over, hating the feeling, my entire body tense. Marcus looks into the child's face. I cannot read his expression. Both Marcus and his son are silent, the Emperor's head cocked, as if he is listening to something. He nods once.
Zacharias Marcus Livius Aquilus Ferrar, he says. I wish you a long reign as Emperor, glory in battle, and a brother at your back.
He gives the child back to me, unnaturally careful.
Take your sister and the child, Shrike, and leave the city. That is an order. She's coming for him.
The Commandant?
Yes, the bleeding Commandant, Marcus snaps. The gates are breached. The Karkans have broken through the first level. She's left the battle in the hands of one of her lieutenants and is on her way here.
Shrike? Lyra's voice is choked. I notice she's pulled her hood up, and I recall then that she knows Marcus, that he nearly killed her once, after he tried to rape her. I shudder, thinking of it. She is hunched over, her voice raspy as she tries to disguise herself.
Your sister.
Livia is deathly pale.
I'm fine, she murmurs as she tries to stand. Give him to me.
I am at her side in two steps, her song already on my lips. I do not think of Marcus's soldiers, who will witness this, or of Raelius or Pharis. I sing until I feel her body heal. The moment that colour returns to her face, Marcus drags her through the door and down to the laundry room, flinging it open. Raelius goes through, then Pharis, then my sister. Marcus does not look at the child again. He gestures me impatiently on. My lord, I say, I cannot leave this city when it...
Protect my heir, he says. The city is lost.
It can't be.
But he shoves me into the tunnel and closes the door behind me. And it is only there, in the darkness, that I realize I have no idea where Lyra is. We run. From the tunnels we cannot hear the madness above. But my mind is torn, half of me wanting to go back to fight, and the other half knowing that I must get my sister and baby Zacharias out of Antium. When we reach a way station in the tunnels where Harper has placed soldiers to guard the evacuation routes, I slow. I need to go back, I say. Livia shakes her head, frantic. Zacharias wails, as if sensing his mother's distress.
You were given an order.
I cannot leave the city, I say. Not like this. Not skulking through the shadows. There are men back there who were counting on me, and I left them.
Heli, no!
Pharis, Raelius, get her to Harper. You know how to find him. Help him however you can. There are still plebeians in the city, in these tunnels, and we need to get them out. I lean toward both of them, pinning them with my gaze. If anything happens to her or the child, I swear to the skies I will kill you both myself. They salute, and I turn to my sister, taking one last look at the baby. Upon seeing my face, he goes quiet. I'll see you soon, young one. I kiss him and Livia and turn back, ignoring my sister's pleas, then demands, for me to return to her side at once. When I get back to the Blackguard barracks, I immediately choke on the smoke that fills the laundry closet. Flames roar at the front of the barracks. From a few streets away, the howls of rampaging Karkans fill the streets. They have not reached here yet, but they will soon. I draw a scarf up over my face and crouch low to avoid the smoke, my warhammer drawn. When I emerge from the room, I nearly slip on the pools of blood everywhere. The men of Jens Aquila, sworn to protect Marcus, lie dead, though it is clear that they took many of the Commandant's men with them. Her body is not among the carnage. But then, I knew it would not be. Caris Veturia would never die in so undignified a manner. There are other bodies among the dead, mariners. Before I can understand what the hells they were doing here, a voice calls out.
Shrike.
The voice is so quiet that I do not at first know where it comes from. But I hunt through the smoke until I find Marcus Farrar, Imperator Invictus, and Overlord of the Realm, pinned against a wall by his own Sim, drowning in his own blood, unable to move. His hands are limp over the wound in his stomach. He has hours yet until he dies. The Commandant did this on purpose. I go to him. Flames lick the wood of the stairwell, and a loud crack sounds from downstairs, a beam falling. I should escape through a window. I should let this monster burn. How long have I waited for this? How long have I wanted him to die? And yet, when I see him pinned here like an animal killed for sport, I feel only pity. And something else, a compulsion, a need, a desire to heal him. No. Oh, no.
Caris moved the Hall of Records, Shrike.
He speaks calmly, if softly, saving his breath to relay what he must.
She moved the treasury.
I sigh in relief. Then the Empire will still stand, even if we lose Antium.
She did it weeks ago. She wanted the city to fall, Shrike. She knew the Karkans would bring ghosts. She knew. They would win.
A dozen disparate puzzle pieces click into place. The illustrian Paters
left days ago for Serra,
Marcus says.
She evacuated them.
And the Master of the Treasury met with her despite her murdering his son. She must have told him what was coming. She must have promised to get his family out in exchange for him moving the Empire's wealth. And the Hall of Records. The record archivists were preparing for a move. Harper told me that when he was getting information on the Commandant. We simply didn't realize what it meant. Caris knew the city would fall. She was planning for it right in front of me. Skies, I should have killed her. Whether the plebeians hated me or not, whether Marcus was overthrown or not, I should have killed that demon. The legions, I say, from Celis and Estium.
They aren't coming. She sabotaged the communiques.
It did not have to be this way, Bloodshrike. Caris's words haunt me. Remember that, before the end. He does not say it is my fault. He doesn't have to.
Antium will fall, Marcus goes on quietly. But the Empire will survive. Caris has ensured that, though she wishes to make certain that my son will not survive with it. Stop her, Bloodshrike. See him on the throne.
He reaches for my hand, his own still strong enough to dig into my flesh so hard that it draws blood.
Swear a blood oath that you will see it done.
I swear it. I say, by blood and by bone. The compulsion to heal him comes over me again. I fight it, but then he speaks.
Shrike, he says. I have a final order for you.
Heal me. I know he's going to say it. The magic rises in me, ready, even as I shrink away from the thought, disgusted, repulsed by it. How can I heal him, the demon who killed my father, who ordered my torture, who abused and beat my sister? The fire edges closer. Leave, Shrike, run! Marcus releases my hand and scrabbles at his side for a dagger, which he thrusts into my hand.
Mercy, Bloodshrike. That is my order. I do not deserve it. I do not even wish it. But you'll give it to me anyway. Because you're good.
He spits out the word, a curse.
It's why my brother loved you.
The Emperor meets my eyes. As ever, his are filled with rage, hatred. But beneath that is something I have never seen before in the 15 years I have known Marcus Farrar. Resignation.
Do it, Shrike, he whispers. He waits for me.
I think of baby Zacharias and the innocence of his gaze. Marcus too must have looked that way once. Perhaps that's what his twin Zack saw when he looked at him, not the monster he had become, but the brother he had been. I remember my father as he died, my mother and my sister. My face is wet. When Marcus speaks, I can barely hear the words.
Please, Shrike.
The Emperor is dead. My voice shakes, but I find my strength in the mask I wear. And when I speak again, it is without emotion. Long live the Emperor! Then I drive the dagger into his throat, and I do not look away until the light in his eyes is gone.
Chapter 52. Elia. The ring does not evanesce. I do not allow myself to look at it until I am outside the Blackguard barracks, tucked in an alcove near the stables, safely away from Emperor Marcus. The baby is strong, and the Bloodshrike's sister is as well. I whispered to her to keep herself clean, to take care of herself to prevent infection, but she saw my face when Marcus entered. She knew. Go, she whispered. Take the towels, as if you were changing them. I did as she said. Swiping the rings at the same time was only a moment's work. No one even looked my way. I took both, not knowing which was the Shrike's ring and which was the ring of her family. Now I stand with them in the madness of Andium's streets, staring, hoping. Only the ghost may stand against the onslaught. Should the lioness's heir claim the butcher's pride, it will evanesce, and the blood of 7 generations shall pass from the earth before the king may seek vengeance again. The ring should be gone. Why did it not happen? I put it on my finger, pull it off. But there's something wrong with it. It does not feel like my armlet. It just feels like a normal hunk of metal. I rack my brain trying to remember if I missed something in the prophecy. Perhaps I have to do something to it, burn it or break it with Serek steel. I cast about for a weapon, something a soldier might have dropped, which is when my neck prickles, and I know instantly that someone watches me. It is a feeling that has become unsettlingly familiar in the past few months. But this time, he shows himself.
Forgive me, liar of Sarah.
The Nightbringer speaks quietly, but the violence latent in his voice still cuts through the shrieks of missiles flying and men dying painfully.
I wish to see your face when you realize that all your work, all your hope, was for nothing.
It is not for nothing, I say. It cannot be.
It was, he saunters toward me. Because what you hold is not the star.
You lie.
Do I?
He closes the distance between us and snatches the rings from my hand. I cry out, but he closes his hand around them and, before my eyes, crushes them to powder. No. Impossible. The curiosity that emanates from him is somehow worse than if he simply gloated.
"What is it like, liar, Sarah?" he says. "To know that no matter what you do, nothing will stop the war that is coming. The war that will annihilate your people."
He's toying with me. "Why did you save me?" I snarl at him. "When the blast hit." For a moment, he is still, and then his shoulders ripple like a great cat shaking itself.
"Run to your brother, Liar of Sarah," he says. "Find a ship to take you far away. You do not wish to witness what is to come."
"You know what it means to destroy an entire race. How could you want it when you have survived it?"
"The scholars deserve destruction."
"You have already destroyed us," I shout. I fight to keep from hitting him, not because I am afraid, but because I know it will do no good. "Look at what the scholars are. Look at what we have become. We are nothing. We are dust. Look," my voice is ragged now. "Look at what you did to me. Look at how you betrayed me. Is it not enough?"
"It is never enough."
He is angry now, my words poking at something tender that he does not wish to touch.
"Do as I say, Liar of Sarah. Run. You heard Shaver's prophecy. The library burned. The dead escaped and marauded. The child will be bathed in blood, but alive. I believe you had a hand in that. The pearl will crack. The cold will enter."
He lifts his hands at the chaos around us. Of course, Antium is referred to as the Pearl of the Empire.
"Jinn prophecies are truth," he says. "I will free my brethren, and we will have our vengeance."
I step back from him. "I will stop you," I say. "I will find some way."
"You failed."
He brushes a scorching, flame-veined hand across my face, and though all that is visible of him are those burning suns beneath his hood, I know he's smiling.
"Now go, child."
He shoves my face away.
"Run."
Chapter 53. Elias. In groups of 10 and 50 and 100, Martha and I hunt down the ghosts and pass them on. The screams of dying marshals grow more distant, the howl of fire ripping through the city more muted, the cries of civilians and children suffering and dying less important to me with every ghost I attend to. Once the escaped ghosts are herded, I turn to those enslaved by the Karkans. The magic used to summon and control them is ancient, but it has a familiar taint to it. The Nightbringer or his ilk taught the Karkans this magic. The spirits are chained to a dozen or so warlocks, minions of the Karkans' leader. If I murder those warlocks, the ghosts will be free. I do not give the killing a second thought. I do not even use my weapons, though they are strapped across my back. Martha's magic suffuses me, and I call on it as easily as I would my own skills with a sim. We circle the warlocks and choke the life from them one by one, until finally, as the day fades and the drums scream out which parts of the city have fallen, I find myself near an enormous building I know well, the Black Guard Barracks. I feel for more ghosts and find nothing, but as I prepare to leave, I catch a flash of brown skin and black hair. Liar. I step toward her immediately. The small bit of my mind that still feels human draws me to her, as ever. As I approach her, I expect Martha to pull at me or take over my body, as he did when I encountered the Shrike. But though I feel him there in my mind, still a part of me, He does nothing. Lyra has seen me.
Elias!
She runs to me, throwing herself into my arms, almost sobbing. As she does, my arms come up around her of their own accord, as if it's something I've done many times. I feel strange. No, not strange. I feel nothing.
It wasn't the ring,
she is saying.
I don't know what the last piece of the star is, but there might still be time to find out. Will you help me?
Yes, I want to say. No, is what comes out of my mouth. Shock fills her eyes, and then, just like in the Mariner village weeks ago, she goes completely still. Everything does. Elias. The voice in my head is not my own, nor is it the djinn's. Do you know me? I don't. Long have I waited for this day. For you to release the last shreds that bound you to the world of the living.
Martha?
The same, Elias. Look. My body remains before Lyra, frozen in time. But my mind travels to a familiar place. I know this sallow yellow sky. This black sea that roils with unknowable creatures just under the surface. I saw this place once before, when Shaver pulled me from the raid. A blurred figure approaches, hovering just above the water, like me. I know who he is without him saying so. Martha.
Welcome to my dimension, Elias Vittorius.
What the 10 bleeding hells?
I say shakily, pointing to the sea.
Are those things?
Do not concern yourself with them,
Martha says.
They are a discussion for another day. Look.
He waves his hand, and a tapestry of images unspools before me. The images begin with the scholar's war on the djinn, and unravel from there, threads of darkness blooming like spilled ink, darkening all they touch. I see how the crimes of the Scholar King reached far beyond what he ever imagined. I see the truth, that without the djinn in this world, there is no balance. They were the destined gatekeepers between the worlds of the living and the dead, and no one, no matter how skilled, can replace an entire civilization. They must return, even if that means war, even if it means destruction. For without them, the ghosts will continue to build up, and whether in 5 years or 50 or 500, they will escape again. And when that happens, they will destroy the world.
Why can't you just set the djinn free? Make them forget what happened?
I require a conduit, a being from your world to harness my power. The amount of power required to restore a civilization would destroy any conduit I chose, human or wraith, djinn or ifrit.
I understand, then, that there is only one path forward, freedom for the djinn. But that freedom will come at a price.
Lyra, I whisper, the Bloodshrike, they will suffer, but you dare to put those you love before all of humanity, child?
Martha asks me softly.
You dare to be so selfish?
Why should Lyra and the Shrike pay for what a scholar monster did 1,000 years ago?
There is a price for greed and violence. We do not always know who will pay it, but for good or ill, it will be paid.
I cannot stop what is to come. I cannot change it. Bleeding hells.
You can give those you once loved a world free of ghosts. You can do your duty, You can give them a chance at surviving the onslaught that must come. You can give them a chance to win one day. But not today. Not today. You have released your ties to strangers, to friends, to family, to your true love. Now surrender to me, for it is your destiny. It is the meaning of your name, the reason for your existence. It is time. It is time. I know the moment everything changes. The moment Ma'atha joins with me so completely that I cannot tell where I end and the magic begins. I am back in my body, in Antium, standing before Lyra. It's as if no time has passed at all since she asked for my aid and I rejected her. When I look down into that beautiful face, I no longer see the girl I loved. I see someone lesser, someone who is aging, dying slowly, like all humans. I see a mortal.
Elias?
The girl, Lyra, speaks, and I turn to her. The djinn have a part to play in this world, and they must be set free. I speak gently because she is a mortal, and she will take this news hard. The world must be broken before it can be remade, I say, or else the balance will never be restored.
No, she says. Elias, no. This is the djinn we are speaking of. If they are free...
I cannot keep the balance alone. It is unfair to expect Lyra to understand. She is only a mortal after all. The world will burn, I say, but it will be reborn from the ashes.
Elias, she says, how can you say this?
You should leave, I say. I do not wish to welcome you to the waiting place. Not yet. May the skies speed your way.
What the hells has that place done to you?
She cries.
I need your help, Elias. The people need you. There are thousands of scholars here. If I cannot get the star, then I can at least get them out. You could...
I must return to the waiting place, I say. Goodbye, Lyra of Serra. Lyra grabs my face and peers into my eyes. A darkness rises in her, something that is fey, but not. It is more than fey. It is atavistic, the essence of magic itself, and it rages.
What have you done to him?
She speaks to Ma'atha, as if she knows he has joined with me, as if she can see him.
Give him back!
My voice, when it comes, is an unearthly rumble that isn't my own. I feel shoved to the side in my own mind, watching as I incline my head.
Forgive me, dear one,
Ma'atha says through me.
It is the only way.
I back away from her and turn east, toward the forest of dusk. Moments later, I am through the masses of Karkans ravaging the city, then beyond them, speeding through the countryside. At last one with Ma'atha. But though I know I go now to my duty, some old part of me twinges, reaches out to whatever it is that I have lost. It feels strange.
It is the pain of what you have given up, but it will fade, Banu al-Ma'atha. You have endured much in a short time, learned much in a short time. You cannot expect to be ready overnight.
I search for the word. It hurts.
Surrender always does, but it will not hurt forever.
Why me? I ask. Why do we have to change and not you?
Why do we have to become less human instead of you becoming more so?
The ocean waves thunder on, and it is man who must swim among them. The wind blows, cold and brittle, and it is man who must protect against it. The earth shakes and cracks, swallows and destroys, but it is man who must walk upon it. So it is with death. I cannot surrender, Elias. It must be you.
I don't feel like myself anymore.
Because you are not yourself. You are me. I am you. And in this way, we will pass the ghosts through. Let your world be spared from their predations.
He falls silent as we leave Antium far behind. Soon, I forget the fighting. I forget the face of the girl I loved. I think only of the task ahead. All is as it must be.
Chapter 54. Liar. Cook finds me beside the stables moments after Elias disappears. I stare after him, disbelieving. He is not the Elias I left even 2 weeks ago. The Elias who brought me back from the Nightbringer's Hell, who told me that we would find a way. But then I remember what he said. If I seem different, remember that I love you, no matter what happens to me.
What in the skies happened to him? What was it inside me that lashed out at him? I think of what the Nightbringer said to me in Edessa.
You know not the darkness that lies within your own heart.
Deal with Elias later, liar. My mind reels. The city has fallen. I have failed, and the scholar slaves, they are trapped here. Antium is surrounded on three sides. Only the north end, built against Mount Videns, is not overrun with Karkans. That is where Cook and I entered the city. And that is how we will escape. That is how we will help the scholars escape. Because I know this feeling sweeping through me far too well. The feeling that all my effort, all I have worked for, means nothing. That everything and everyone is a lie. That all is cruel and unforgiving, and that there is no justice. I have survived this feeling before, and I will survive it again. In this fiery hellscape of a world, this mess of blood and madness, justice exists only for those who take it. I'll be damned if I'm not one of them. Girl, Cook appears from the streets. What has happened? Is the Mariner Embassy still clear? I ask her as we head away from the sounds of fighting. Have the Karkans taken that district, or can we escape that way?
We can escape.
Good, I say. We're getting as many scholars out as we can. Do you understand? I'm going to send them to you at the embassy. I need you to tell them where to go.
The Karkans have broken through to the city's second level. They'll be at the embassy in a matter of hours. And then, what will you do? Escape with me now. The scholars will find their own way out.
They will not, I say, because there is no way out. We're surrounded on three sides. They don't know there are escape routes. Let someone else do this. There is no one else. There is only us.
This is a stupid idea, Cook says. That's going to get us both killed.
I have never asked anything of you. I grab her hands and she flinches, but I hold tight to her. I never had the opportunity. I am asking you to do this for me. Please. I'll send them to the embassy. You lead them out. I do not wait for her response. I turn and run, knowing that she will not say no, not after what I just said to her. The scholar's district is in a panic, with people packing and searching for relatives and trying to fathom how they will escape the city. I stop one of the girls I see running across the main square. She looks a few years younger than me.
Where is everyone going?
I ask her.
No one knows where to go, she wails. I can't find my mother, and the marshals are all gone. They must have started evacuating the city, but no one told us.
My name is Lyra of Sarah, I say. The Karkans have broken through. They will be here soon, but I'm going to help you leave. Do you know where the Mariner Embassy is? She nods, and I heave a sigh of relief. Tell everyone, every scholar you see, to go to the Mariner Embassy. A scar-faced woman will take you out of the city. Tell them to go now, to leave their things and run. The girl nods rapidly and runs away. I grab another scholar, a man Darin's age, and give him the same message. Whoever will stop, whoever will listen, I tell them to go to the embassy, to find the scar-faced woman. I see recognition in the eyes of a few when I tell them my name, but the sounds of fighting draw closer, and no one is stupid enough to ask questions. The message spreads, and soon the scholars are fleeing the square en masse. I hope to the skies everyone in the district gets the message. Then I plunge into the city. The girl was right. The only marshals I see are soldiers, all of whom are running toward the fighting. I think of the wagon trains I saw leaving when Cook and I were approaching Antium. The wealthiest of the marshals left here weeks ago. They gave up on their capital and left the soldiers and the plebeians and the scholars to die. I spot a group of scholars clearing rubble under the direction of two marshals who aren't paying attention because they are listening to drum messages. They discuss the messages in low, urgent tones, as aware of the sounds of nearby fighting as I am. I use the marshal's distraction to sneak up to the scholars.
We can't simply run, a woman glances at the marshals fearfully. They'll come after us.
You must, I say. If you don't run from them now, you'll be running from the Karkans. But by then, you'll have nowhere to go. Another woman in the group hears, drops her pick and breaks away, and that is all the other scholars need. 60 of them scatter, the adults grabbing the few children, all disappearing in a dozen directions before the marshals can even understand what is happening. I urge the scholars on and stop to warn any others I see, asking them to pass on the message. By the time I reach the foreign district, I see hundreds of scholars streaming toward the embassy. A fight spills into the streets in front of me. A group of martial oxes battles a much larger force of Karkans. Though the barbarian steel breaks on the oxes' sims, the marshals are hard-pressed, overwhelmed by sheer numbers. If this is happening all over the city, then the barbarians will be in control of Antium by nightfall. I skirt around the battle, and when I get to the embassy, scholars spill out the doors. Cook's grumpy, raspy voice is instantly recognizable as she orders everyone down the steps and into the tunnels.